Hey everybody, Marcus here. In this video, I wanted to start from the very edge of MGTOW and look outwards beyond its borders. Now, surely, we within the MGTOW community, regardless of any particular interpretation of MGTOW, acknowledge at least one thing. MGTOW has a border. Now, this is not a video attempting to delineate who is and who is not MGTOW. No, this is a video meant to explore the their own way aspect of men going their own way. This element called their own way, we treat as completely fluid and subjective to each individual. This element of their own way is the border of MGTOW itself. For MGTOW has nothing to say about what way that way will look like. No, it is not even that charitable. Beyond its borders, MGTOW throws you to the wolves and demands you march in that very direction that MGTOW prides itself in not helping you find. In a way, this is a cruelty within MGTOW. Now, let us imagine that once Neo was unplugged from the Matrix and flushed into that pool of filth, I mean Morpheus simply dusted his hands, commended himself for a job well done, and then steered his ship elsewhere, leaving Neo to his fate. Now, when the slaves were set free in America, many did not know how to live, you know, away from the plantation. A slave's life leading up to freedom in no way prepared him to fend for himself in the outside world. Though given freedom, so too was security, stability, and direction stripped from the slave. From the first analogy, perhaps we as MGTOW have some level of obligation to those we set free. You know, perhaps we need to provide at least a rough framework on how one is to go their own way. From the second analogy, you know, perhaps we should take the warning that if we do not set up that rough framework, the plantation will indefinitely beckon, haunting, tormenting, you know, growing outward from recalcitrant roots that should have been burned, until flowers of doubt bloom in a MGTOW soul, until he starts to think to himself, cautiously, hey, it really wasn't that bad. Like Dante in Canto 1 of the Inferno, a newly minted MGTOW, too, could say the following. Midway upon the journey of our life, I found myself in a dark wood, for the straightforward pathway had been lost. Oh my! How hard a thing it is to say. What was this forest, savage, rough, and stern? Which in the very thought renews the fear. The dark wood is what looms at the border of MGTOW. But unlike Dante, who found Virgil as his guide, no such guide lays in wait for us men going their own way. So, for those who wish to follow, and for those who wish a guide, let me help see you through this dark wood. Let me ask you this question. What comes to your mind if I say that I live a Christian way of life? Well, surely you would imagine me attending church on Sundays. You could picture me praying at the foot of my bed each night. I mean, you know, with a cross hanging on the wall. So too, you could imagine that I would aspire to treat others as I wish to be treated, that I would value charity and possibly volunteer in a shelter. If I was struck, you would expect me to turn the other cheek. If I avoided mortal sins such as sloth, greed, gluttony, wrath, or pride, you would nod your head and agree that this made sense too. You would continue to observe me making decisions that fit the Christian framework. And why would I be doing these things? Well, you would have to conclude that I was living a Christian life to honor God, so I could avoid hell and get into heaven, namely, for salvation. But if you saw me cheating or stealing, you would frown upon that as not being very Christian of me. It would also not be very Christian of me to support abortion, now would it? No, it would not. But what if I said that I live a Muslim way of life? Would you not imagine me praying 5 times a day in the direction of Mecca? Would you not expect me to attend mosque, honor Ramadan, and make choices in my life that are informed by the Quran? And if I do the opposite, would you not look upon me as being a bad Muslim? Well, indeed you would. And why would I do all these things? Again, to honor God and attain salvation. But if we follow this train of thought, what comes to your mind if I were to tell you that I live a philosophical way of life? Do you imagine any special books of reverence? Do you imagine me enacting daily rituals? Do you imagine me making decisions informed according to some higher purpose? Or instead, do you imagine that I've pieced together some loose set of rules that I simply call my philosophy and live by that? If you imagine me piecing together some loose set of rules to live by, you would be wrong. You see, in living philosophically, there are indeed special books of reverence, and there are also daily rituals. There's also a higher purpose that informs one's moral decisions. Now, let me see if I can clarify all of this. In 529 AD, the Emperor Justinian I, seeking political unification through theological orthodoxy, closed the philosophical schools in Athens. The schools of thought closed were Platonism and Stoicism. Now, by then, Epicureanism had declined 2 centuries prior, and Aristotelianism had partially been absorbed into the Platonic school. But why would Emperor Justinian close down these schools of thought? I mean, after all, neither in Platonism or Stoicism are there gods or a god which is worshipped. Were these schools not merely academic enterprises? No, they were not merely academic. You see, today you imagine philosophy as some sort of academic enterprise detached from life. And you see religion, you know, like Christianity and Islam, as a way of life. Well, the reverse used to be true back in the ancient world. Philosophy was a way of life, and Christianity was mostly a theoretical framework. Religion copied the existing philosophical schools by extending the basic Christian beliefs into a framework of practices, rituals, and made it into a way of life. Once this was achieved, the competing ways of life needed to be removed by Emperor Justinian in order to maintain a cultural orthodoxy. Over the centuries that followed, philosophy slowly turned into nothing more than abstract theory that, you know, one simply speculates over but does not adopt in practice. But let us draw some parallels between Christianity and, say, Stoicism to make this even clearer. In Christianity, you have an end goal of achieving salvation. The mechanism for this is to live your life resembling the life of Jesus. The Bible becomes the source material you draw from. To best mimic the life of Jesus, you need to pray so that the Christian message and way of life is hammered into your head. I mean, just think of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. The last 7 lines of the Lord's Prayer give clear moral instructions on how to behave. 70% of this prayer is moral instruction. Now, let us contrast this to Stoicism. In Stoicism, you have an end goal of attaining eudaimonia, and eudaimonia being loosely translated to happiness. The mechanism for this is to cleanse your life of the passions. The writings of Zeno of Citium, Cleanthes, and Chrysippus become the source material you draw from. And to best cleanse your life of the passions, you need to practice spiritual exercises. Now, what would a spiritual exercise look like? Well, the Emperor Marcus Aurelius was a devout Stoic, and his work entitled The Meditations is exactly that. It is a book composed of short Stoic spiritual exercises. One example is as follows. The happiness of your life depends upon the quality of your thoughts. Therefore, guard accordingly, and take care that you entertain no notions unsuitable to virtue and reasonable nature. Now, this spiritual exercise is moral instruction. Its function is to hammer into your head the message that you need to keep notions unsuitable to virtue clear from your mind. Thoughts of cowardice, you know, thoughts of revenge or thoughts of greed need to be stricken down as soon as they enter your mind. The reason the spiritual exercise is in place is because following it directly works towards purging yourself of emotion and therefore helps you attain eudaimonia. Now, the reason why you need to continue to repeat such spiritual exercise is because repetition trains your subconscious to forge those pathways in your mind for when you need them the most. You know, it's like someone training in a martial art. You practice the same moves over and over so that when you actually need to use them, they come as reflexes. Christianity is an internally coherent system, you know, though some may argue otherwise. I will, however, maintain that it is coherent for the purpose of this video. Stoicism is also an internally coherent system. Now, this is important because the rules within each system are not arbitrary. There are things you do and there are things you do not do. The ultimate goal of each system is the guiding force that determines the do's and don'ts. In Christianity, the ultimate goal is salvation. And in Stoicism, the ultimate goal is eudaimonia. Now, there are four philosophical schools I want to present to you. Firstly is Stoicism, which we have already talked about. The highest principle in the Stoic way of life is achieving eudaimonia, and this is done by avoiding pleasures and egoistic self-interest. Next is Epicureanism. The guiding principle of Epicureanism is the attainment of ataraxia. Now, Epicureanism is a, you know, robust form of hedonism, but more refined than the garden variety attempts at hedonism. I mean, Epicureanism guards one against pursuit of false pleasures. Ataraxia is a lucid state of robust tranquility, you know, characterized by ongoing freedom from distress and worry. The third school is Pyrrhonism. Pyrrhonism is the purest form of skepticism, and its goal is also ataraxia. However, where Epicurus believed ataraxia is achieved through a form of hedonism, Pyrrho believed it was achieved through intellectual skepticism, namely, avoiding false beliefs by suspending judgment. The fourth and final school I want to look at is Aristotelianism. This school's highest goal is also eudaimonia, but Aristotle, unlike Zeno, did not believe that eliminating the passions was the way to go. Within Aristotelianism, happiness is achieved through the contemplative life and the pursuit of virtue. The point is that these four philosophical schools all offer an internally coherent system with texts and spiritual exercises that, you know, are meant to lead to the goal of that way of life. You know, what about the abstract content of philosophical texts in these schools? I mean, what is their purpose? Well, these are part of the spiritual exercises. You reflect upon the text to bring you further towards the stated end goal. By commenting and writing your own arguments, for example, you're also engaging in a spiritual exercise. The goal is to transform yourself and not to come up with some brilliant abstract theorem. But what do these schools transform you into? Well, a practitioner who has reached absolute mastery of any of these ways of life is the sage. The sage is the living embodiment of wisdom, an idealized implementation of a particular school's way of life. One common quality of any sage is a constant inner state of happiness and serenity. You see, your progress as a philosopher is not determined by your ability to, well, recite complex arguments or beat people in debates, write books, or any other such nonsense. Your progress as a philosopher is measured with how closely your actions actually resemble the way of life presented by any given school. A person may completely suck at the high abstract stuff, but still live a life in tune with the message. Such a person will reap the benefits of that way of life too. What I've said so far, I mean, is clearly in great contrast to what one sees in academia. I mean, academic philosophers, well, if they can even be called philosophers, live to publish, you know, to get on the tenure track, and for innumerable reasons that are completely detached from the texts that they're supposed experts of. Now, these people are lovers of words and not wisdom. They play their word games and dwell on paradoxes while completely missing the forest for the trees. To the academic, the argument is the product of philosophy. To the philosopher of ancient Greece, his life was the product of philosophy. Now let me ask you, how many times have you heard the question, "What do you want out of life?" followed by the answer, "Well, I just want to be happy." But how many of the people answering this way even understand what happiness is? How many of them have spent any meaningful amount of energy trying to find this answer? Few, if I were to be generous. The answer is always circular with these people. Happiness is doing what makes me happy. Well, does drinking make you happy? Why not just drink all day, every day for the rest of your life? Does watching movies make you happy? Then do nothing but watch movies. I mean, strange how things don't quite work this way, isn't it? No. To achieve higher goals such as eudaimonia, ataraxia, salvation, or even pleasure, you need to follow the rules appropriate to each end. And these rules are not some mishmash of memes you pick up along the way. They're thought through coherent systems whose rules are derived from careful argument and justification. Your entire life needs to be aligned to these rules, and often you find that what you need to do is the opposite of what you believe to be the case. This is why I say to all you MGTOW who are forging your own way, MGTOW has never made you the promise that your life will not suck just because you swallowed the red pill. MGTOW has nothing to say, refuses to say anything about how to lead your life. MGTOW will not lead you to ruin, but neither will it lead you to happiness. In fact, it does not lead you anywhere other than on a tour of the 9 circles of hell, which is the male-female dynamic. But once the tour is done, you are thrown into purgatory with no guidance. To navigate your way through purgatory, you will need a new guide. This guide is philosophy. This guide is the content of this video. You need to explore your belief system and come to a conclusion as to what the highest end is for the type of being you are. You need to conclude what is the highest end for a human being. Is it happiness, tranquility, pleasure, salvation, or contemplation? Once you know the answer to this question, you can now move out of purgatory and ascend the spheres of paradise, guided by the school of thought that reflects your conclusion. By the point you leave purgatory, you will know exactly who your guide will be. Thanks for listening. Go team.